This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.
Everybody is to leave here immediately. This cafe is closed until further notice. Clear the room at once.
How can you close me up on what ground?
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
You're winning, sir.
Oh, thank you very much. Everybody out at once.
Round up the usual suspects.
2-1-1-0.
I know some people want me to bypass Congress and change the laws on my own.
It is the agenda for the 21st century you're living in today. For a brave new world where everything that you cherished and held true will no longer exist.
The original Constitution, I think it is an imperfect document, and I think it is a document that reflects some deep flaws.
And that would authorize him to use the military to arrest people in the United States who, in the president's opinion, are enemies of the country.
You'll find that they've also asked for the right to imprison farmers who wouldn't keep books as prescribed by the federal government. The Secretary of Agriculture asked for the right to seize farms through condemnation and resell them to other individuals. And contained in that same program was a provision that would have allowed the federal government to remove 2 million farmers from the soil.
These government Republicans and Democrats were busy shredding the last vestiges of the Constitution. They're talking about inserting the army into domestic law enforcement. The homeland is part of the battlefield, and people can be held without trial, whether an American citizen or not.
I have been often to, the mothership in New York City, but it's good to have an outpost of the council right here down the street from the State Department. We get a lot of advice from the council, so this will mean I won't have as far to go to be told what we should be doing and how we should think about the future.
Take off the tinfoil hat and put on the Kevlar. It's time for battle with Paul Preston and the Agenda 21 Show.
Well, hello and welcome to Agenda 21 Radio. This is the radio show that is stopping totalitarianism one exceptional American at a time. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, are you that exceptional American? I suspect you are. That's why you're listening to this radio show. So welcome aboard. We've got a lot of things going on. Julian Assange. Is going crazy. Well, I don't know if he's going crazy, but the Dems are going crazy because Julian Assange is here. Right. Julian Assange is here. And that makes them very uncomfortable. Trust me, it's going to be on them. They're trying to keep him offshore. They don't want him on American soil. Guess again, homies. Guess again. Doesn't look like that's going to be taking place. No, not at all. We got a lot to cover here. We're trying to hook up with our guest, who'll be here momentarily, and some big things going on in the third hour. We're going to be talking not just about Oroville, but the a situation that developed out here in California, and that is that this is a banner news day. That a coalition of California district attorneys came together yesterday and had a major press conference in which district attorneys from throughout the state denounced collectively the governor, Gavin Newsom, for his handling of the death penalty. We're going to be talking about that in some magnificent presentations by people that have been personally affected by the murder of one of their loved ones. Yeah, that's what we look forward to. I'm telling you, very compelling. One of the most impressive displays I've seen. It reminds me of a Well, a New California discussion with people. It reminds me of the New California grievances that have been taking place. 63 of them. We'll read that grievance to you loud and clear so that you have an understanding of that in the third hour. So grievance 63 in the third hour, and then also the DA's pleads. Okay, we're going to be hooking up with our guest here. And Scott Bennett, longtime friend and associate, is going to be with us in here momentarily as soon as we get, as soon as we fire this mother up. You know, that back in the day when I used to raise hot rods, used to have these moments in which we'd want to spark up the car. We'd say, let's fire this mother up. So we're firing this mother up right now. So with us right now is Scott Bennett. Scott, welcome to Agenda 21 Radio. We've been singing your plaudits here for the last hour.
It's great to be with you, Paul. What an exciting time, huh?
Yeah, what an exciting time. And we're, ladies and gentlemen, you can't see us, but we can see you, so to speak, on our Skype. Scott's fully dressed and ready for TV, and then here I am in my sleeping clothes, literally doing radio professional style. Anyway, that's a visual that you don't get to see right now. But anyway, with us though is Scott Bennett. And Scott Bennett, of course, the author of Shell Game, radio announcer in his own right, has his own radio program, and been doing so many public speaking tours and events on behalf of not just New California, but also just liberty and freedom. Because he knows a lot about liberty and freedom, and he's also the guy who put together the 48-minute videotape that Putin saw. And I guess this is the Russian collusion part of what we've done here, Scott.
Yeah.
We're the colluders. We're being outed right now. In which Putin saw the 48-minute video of Scott and the evidence he needed to start bombing ISIS. And that was back in 2015. It's a long time ago. Can you believe that? It's 4 years. It's coming up to 4 years.
Justice turns slow.
Man, gee, Christmas. And now all of a sudden, we've got Bill Barr. We've got Julian Assange. Let's hit the Julian Assange part of it, because I know you've had you used to actually play in that world, didn't you, with Julian Assange?
Yeah, I think he's going to be redeemed very much. This arrest really, I think, is a gift, because he's only being charged with something that's 5 years maximum, which means he'd get 1 to 2 years based on his sentencing. But he's not being charged with espionage. And really, what he revealed to Americans were the great crimes and betrayals and treasons that were done by government actors, specifically Hillary Clinton, Eric Holder, Lanny Breuer, Loretta Lynch, all of these famous or infamous names that are now revolving around the doors and the discussions of Hannity and Tucker and all the rest of them. We were talking about this in 2012 and filing letters and reports to members of the Senate and the Congress and the Armed Services Committee using Julian Assange's WikiLeaks as the foundation of our material, because the WikiLeaks that Julian Assange had sent to the Swiss bank whistleblower Brad Birkenfeld detailed Hillary Clinton's discussions as Secretary of State in how to make deals with Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and other Saudi Arabian ISIS, Wahhabi, Salafist countries in order to fund mercenaries up into Syria and Libya and elsewhere. So they were discussing how to do this with Switzerland. They were doing it with Robert Wolf, chairman of the Americas of UBS. They were discussing it with the law firm Covington & Burling, Stuart Eisenstadt of Covington & Burling, Roger Zakheim of Covington & Burling, who later joined, who is the son of my boss, Dov Zakheim, who was in charge of terrorist financing. And Eric Holder and Lanny Breuer used to work for Covington & Burling before they joined government. And then they returned to Covington & Burling after they quit government. A couple months after my report seemed to be battling around and bouncing off the halls of Congress like a pinball machine, I think they started getting worried. And I think they invented the Russian collusion thing as an excuse, because, we were talking with Russian TV, and they've conveniently relabeled Russian TV as a Russian intelligence asset.
Right.
And that makes it very easy to say anybody that appears on Russian TV is colluding and working with the Russian government. Well, no, that's a silly man's way of trying to invent something that's not there. All we were doing is telling the truth on any TV channel and platform that would happen to have us. And it was not American TV, sadly enough. It wasn't Fox, but I think those things are changing because I saw Tucker's eyes bug out of his head when he looked at my book. So I think, we're proceeding judiciously, and this is only a matter of time before President Trump uses this to say, aha, this is the real reason you spied on me, because Hillary Clinton is engaged in the greatest crime of treason since the founding of the country.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's kind of interesting is that you started playing around with this, because you were actually – give us a little bit of history so people put this in context, because, you know, we have to do this all the time, is remind people of who we are.
Yeah.
But tell us how you got involved in the intelligence sector, because this is quite a story in itself. But it also blends into the fact that, you know, you were right in the middle of everything when Obama was elected, and all of a sudden, you know, you find all of this information. So tell us how you got into this.
Well, I never talk about anything classified. I'll preview it and caveat it with that. But I do talk about what I can. And what I did was I was in the Bush administration from 2003 to 2008. And I was in the Heritage Foundation before that. And after the Bush administration, I was invited to join Booz Allen Hamilton, which is a big consulting firm. Edward Snowden worked for Booz Allen Hamilton in the cyber operations division in Hawaii. I was PSYOP, psychological operations. So I worked at the State Department, Crystal City, SOCOM, CENTCOM, and a variety of other, worked with a variety of other interagencies, three-letter agencies. And I did TSSCI stuff, top secret, you know, secret compartmentalized information stuff. And I was assigned to U.S. Central Command to do counter-terrorist financing, to analyze all of the banks, the Swiss bank accounts, the offshore accounts, the money laundering mechanisms, the whole alphabet of all of the instrumentation that the terrorists and the terrorist supporters and financiers and political players use to fund their jihad, Wahhabist, Salafist operations. And Saudi Arabia was my country. I gave briefings on Saudi Arabia. I knew every inch of Saudi Arabia and Qatar as well, but all the countries within the U.S. Central Command area of operation. And Saudi Arabia was my crown jewel. And I started seeing a lot of things that were just problematic, that were looking the other way, that seemed to be questionable. Then the Obama administration started falling into the orbit of our intelligence analysis, and of course the nonprofit foundations and Hillary Clinton's foundations started popping up. And the next thing I know, when I started filing reports, and you know me, Paul, I kind of attack things like a pit bull hanging on a rubber tire from a tree I don't let go. And they had to cut the tree branch down by arresting me at the front gate, accusing me of a DUI that was thrown out later. I thought this was part of my Army training because I was going to be deployed. Well, it wasn't. It was part of Obama's training to get me the hell out of the evidence room that he didn't want me looking in. And I was charged, arrested, and subsequent to that, when they threw out the DUI charge, they said, well, your paperwork on base isn't filled out properly, so we're firing you from Booz Allen Hamilton and removing you from base. And 9 months later, when I kept making noise about this, they charged me with making a false statement on a housing form for filling out a form allegedly wrong. And I thought, this is ridiculous. This has got to be a test. It's so ridiculous because it was the first time in the history of the United States that a military person had been charged for a military activity in a civilian federal court by Obama Justice Department lawyers. But nothing should surprise us now, having seen all the stuff they've done to General Flynn and everyone else. But I was the first canary in the coal mine. I was the first one that they did this to in 2010. And they charged me with making a false statement. David Shalala, Donna Shalala's nephew, Donna Shalala, who was president of the Clinton Foundation, was shuttled in to be my attorney. I thought this was going to go away. I didn't make too much light of it at the time. But Donna Shalala's nephew comes in, represents me, doesn't represent me, doesn't say or do anything, doesn't submit any of my paperwork that would have made this go away. I was trying to spare the Army embarrassment, but I shouldn't have, because there's no honorable men for the most part anymore in the military or the politics department under Obama, at least. There are hopefully now coming back under Trump. But they threw me into a Florida court with a judge named Virginia Hernandez Covington, who was related to the law firm Covington and Burling.
No setup there.
You couldn't make it up, Paul. Yeah,
no setup there.
the judge that even heard this is implicated in CIA operations. The CIA had come after me and invented another false story that I had dressed up in a police uniform, CIA's Whack and Hunt organization. So, you know, the whole house of cards started tumbling around, and I'm just kind of looking around enjoying the colors going, wow, what did I do? Who did I piss off? This is really interesting. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you, God works in miraculous ways, because had they not, you know, taken me from court, and I never spoke, I never testified, because again, I was a TSSCI guy, Army guy. I was trying to spare everybody embarrassment. I didn't know what was going on. And I thought I was going to appeal. I thought I was going to be released from the court and allowed to go to the military court and get all this. No, they threw me right in jail. And it was like Ben-Hur over the desert on the way to the rowing galleys. And for the next 2 years, I put together shell game, because the moment I landed in prison, God delivered me into a miracle, because I met the Swiss banker Brad Birkenfeld, who had all the WikiLeaks cables from 2009 onward that described Hillary Clinton, her pay-to-play operations with Union Bank of Switzerland, HSBC, the Swiss government, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Mauritania, Algeria, Morocco, all the countries and area operations of Central Command, and Covington and Burling, and Eric Holder, and Lanny Brewer, and Loretta Lynch, and Stuart Eisenstadt, everybody. Brad Birkenfeld hit everything. And he was the intelligence asset that I had needed and been looking for at U.S. Central Command, and I met him in prison. So that was all God, white hat stuff, and it terrifies Hillary Clinton. It scares the pants off of these deep staters, because they can't shut me up. I didn't find this out in the skiff. I didn't find this out down range in Iraq. I found this in a Pennsylvania prison with Brad Birkenfeld, and he gave me copies of bank accounts. He gave me copies of Saudi financiers that were tied to all sorts of political figures and politicians and such. And we wrote this report shell game, and it was typed up on a prison typewriter. And I didn't want to change that. I wanted people to see the authenticity of the typewriter and know this was written like Robinson and Crusoe and Friday on that island, typing it up, putting it in a bottle and sending it out. And that's not too far from it, because I had guys smuggling this report out under their shirts, getting it out to the Armed Services Committee, the intelligence committees, generals at U.S. Central Command, James Mattis, General Michael Flynn at DIA, Dianne Feinstein, who was the chair of the Intelligence Committee, who subsequently hung herself basically by being exposed by Senator Bill Nelson and having a conversation about me, but yet not doing anything with the report, not doing anything about the financial revelations. And that's treason, because, see, they've been aiding and abetting the financing of terrorism by ignoring intentionally, by acting with omission, the shell game report. So people can go to shellgamewhistleblower.com, and the report's up there, and they can get it.
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting that you started to realize the implications of this while you were working there, and then of course you were playing. You went right along with the game, picked up, didn't really stop with what you were doing, especially when you got in prison with Brad Birkenfeld. And, you know, putting the two of you together was a stroke of brilliance, of course, that you were able to put the context of shell game into effect. Now, we're talking about a time range from about 2008 on to about 2012, and that's when they put you in prison. Isn't that correct? About 2011,
12? Yep, that's right. They put me in prison in July of 2011, and I finally came to rest in the Pennsylvania prison after going through this horrendous Kafkaesque journey on a bus that turned around in Oklahoma. It was on the way to California, and then miraculously the bus turned around in Oklahoma and took me to Pennsylvania. I didn't know why. I was pissed off by it, but then I land in Pennsylvania. And at a bocce court, playing bocce with a bunch of mafiosa players who loved me because I was the only one who could type. And I was writing letters to get them into the drug program. So I've got all the mafia around me that loved me, the Italian mafia, the Russian mafia, the Spanish mafia. And I'm one of the teachers there. I'm working with CEOs from Citibank, Joe Nocio from Quest, all these high-level people that you'd never imagine were all working in the prison library being the tutors for everybody. Well, that was on the bocce ball court. I meet Brad Birkenfeld, and Brad and I sit down and over hours with another Green Beret colonel who was up there too. We say, wait a minute, you did this, Brad? I was doing this for U.S. Central Command. You're the guy I was looking for. You've got all the material that I could have used to shut down this entire operation. And he said, and he was so pissed off. Brad was just, he couldn't believe it. He was a civilian, but he couldn't believe that his intelligence finally had fallen into the hands of someone that would have done something with it. Because before that, he was chased down by Edward Snowden and the CIA in Switzerland. Oliver Stone put that in his film because I briefed Oliver Stone on this. And Brad was chased out of Switzerland by the CIA. Snowden was part of that operation. Snowden worked with me at Booz Allen Hamilton and saw my report going around the TSSEI channels. That was about 6 months before he left the country, and I think we were probably responsible because he knew he was going to get targeted as well.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of interesting because at that time, Snowden was working in Hawaii.
Yep.
And he had all the family secrets and everything, and then he was watching what was going on with you and Birkenfeld, and it was kind of like, wait a minute, I better get out of Dodge, which he did. He got out of Dodge.
Yep, he got out of Dodge. He took all the family secrets with him, and he did probably one of the greatest things that could be done because he exposed illegal activity. And any time you expose government illegal activity, unconstitutional activity, you cannot be punished or penalized for that. You cannot be charged with a crime. That's why, in a sense, these things that Julian Assange revealed, he showed helicopters shooting up, civilians and stuff like that. Anything like that happens in war. But with regards to the other revelations that came out that show treasonous activities, illegal activities, unconstitutional activities by Hillary Clinton or other players, those are not crimes because the crimes are what Hillary Clinton and these other people did, not what Julian Assange did in revealing these things to the American people. So that's where the constitutionality and the law will come in, that anytime there's illegal activity by people who are in government, revealing that material, however it's found, cannot be construed as a crime because you're showing things that are unconstitutional. So they don't get government protection or the protection under the law for the whistleblower showing this stuff. But that's what Brad was desperately fighting into. He came over to the United States. He tried to give this to the Treasury. He tried to give it to the Department of Justice. Everyone denied him. They kicked him out of the office. They threatened him. They pounded their fists on the table. Finally, he was given a subpoena by the Senate. He went in and testified before Senator Carl Levin and John McCain and all these people, who then sealed his testimony and then used it against him and prosecuted him with the very secrets he had given them. He was the only one who went to jail because they wanted to bury this. 19,000 bank accounts that he brought over, hundreds of millions of dollars. Hillary Clinton, Eric Holder, Lanny Breuer, Loretta Lynch, Barack Obama, and their team of dwarfs stole all this money and used it for nefarious black operations. And that's what they need to have full prosecutions for. And Brad will testify, I will testify, Julian Assange will testify, and I think Snowden would testify on the validity of Shell Game and say, yep, that's just one of the many operations that Hillary Clinton did. But it's a humdinger because it was the first pay-to-play that she did in 2009, and it's what she hid on her servers in her computer in her bathroom, where all of these discussions of Union Bank of Switzerland, 19,000 bank accounts, where they were going, how much money was there, who held the accounts, who was contacting these people at the Department of Justice. Hey, you've got a Swiss bank account with $10 million. You can keep it, but we want $5 million or else you're going to go to jail. And that's what they did. They did a massive shakedown of the people who had these accounts, and Brad Birkenfeld had it all. Now, luckily, Brad's out of the country, but I think they still will be brought in to testify because this is something the American people, when they know it, will absolutely go apoplectic over because their sons and daughters have been killed and wounded in these areas of operation because the weapon systems have been purchased by these bank accounts. It was part of the reason that Chris Stevens and Benghazi and everything, fell apart and went completely south.
Well, that's kind of interesting because, the tie-in to Benghazi, 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 a lot of people don't understand that tie-in yet, but we'll get to that in a second. I want to come back to the fact that you were ultimately released, and when you were released, you're basically a free man. I think you're still in the military, weren't you, when you were released?
Yeah, I was. I was released in 2014. I was still a military officer. I was pounding at the prison door. Remember this, Paul. Michael Isikoff and Tom Hamburger came up and interviewed me for 2 hours. And they were later revealed to be most likely Mockingbird CIA assets because Michael Isikoff and Tom Hamburger wrote damaging stories. One was about the Christopher Steele Carter Page revelations. That was Michael Isikoff, and Tom Hamburger wrote the article in Yahoo News about Donald Trump Jr. getting the revelations of the WikiLeaks early. And that never happened. That was a lie. So these two individuals should be investigated for being CIA assets because they received shell game and did absolutely nothing with it. Mm-hmm. My cousin and my aunt had their houses broken into about a month later in one of the, calmest, quietest white bread communities in America. Their homes were broken into within a month of each other. Their computers stolen because they were on my mailing list, and the CIA wanted to see what they had.
One of the things that crops up is that after 2014, you became quite aggressive at notifying people in Congress. It became like a mission, and you started making your pronouncements and making things known about shell game and so on. Were you finally discharged from the Army?
In 2014, the Army discharged me, and I said, well, I'm fighting this. And they said, well, you have to fight this and win it, and then we will reevaluate probably reactivate your commission. They were obsessed with not representing this in any way, not touching it. Now, I'm not going to let them get away, but civilian side to be resolved.
It's they have their reasons. Apparent now they had their reasons. Too hot to touch, too hot to handle, and as it is right now, because really this whole story is the essence of what is going on right now, even to the criticisms of Bill Barr and Mueller and all this other thing, because there's a not just massive confusion on the part of the Democrats. I think it's very, very clear, what is going on with them and how they're trying to, I think they're in protection mode right now. They're trying to get out in front of a narrative in which they're trying to protect themselves down range, because it's clear that this whole thing is the shell game is about to collect around them. One of the things I wanted to find out, though, from you is your thoughts about what has been going on as you take a look right now in present day. We're going to come back to earlier in a second, but what's happening with Bill Barr and this whole it's basically, as I said on Tuesday, there was a huge pivot that was taken by this nation, that he wipes out the narrative of Mueller and everybody else completely, much to the chagrin of the people that you were actually even contacted between 2014 and even currently, and including myself, I was helping you in some of these cases, people like talking with Michael Cohen, representatives from the Trump campaign and then the Trump administration, were very keenly aware of the content of this information, even so much so that the president was going out stating things that come from this radio show and also from your book, such as the notion that the founders of ISIS were Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, which is a very, very fair statement, isn't it?
Yeah.
From your perspective, you want to elaborate on that for a second?
Yeah, well, I mean, I love the president. I think Donald Trump is one of the greatest presidents that's ever come in, and I only wanted this to help him. And I don't mind getting tackled as long as he gets the football and scores the touchdown. And I want this to help him expose the criminals and traitors who have abused this country for 8 years and thought they were going to get away and continue doing it, but God had other plans by putting – Trump in as the president. So I outreach to him with that spirit of love and truth and give this to the president. And I contacted Donald Trump's staff and I contacted Michael Cohen and I spoke and briefed them over computer and recorded it on Skype, of course, and said, look, here's what the president needs to know about. Here's what they've been doing. Here's my credentials. You can contact Senator Dick Black. You can contact everybody. Senator Dick Black was subsequently targeted.
Yes, he
it's
was.
Like everybody I touch, Paul, becomes targeted and becomes tainted and abused and attacked because Senator Black was attacked by Andrew McCabe and Terry McAuliffe and Hillary Clinton. They tried to remove
let's hold
him
that for
office.
A second. That's Andrew McCabe of FBI, Andrew McCabe, involved with trying to take down for the first time a sitting president in a coup d'etat because Andrew McCabe's wife was really at the last moment drawn in to run a campaign against Dick Black in Virginia. Yep. And she received $750,000 from where? The Clinton Foundation to run that campaign. And Andy yep. McCabe was right in on that. I mean, that's something that hasn't come up yet.
No,
and you know it's going to. You know that's going to come up.
Yeah, yeah, it is. I mean, cream rises to the top. You know, they're being exposed for this thing. That will sink McCabe and Terry McAuliffe and Clinton and Joe McCabe because they sent four FBI agents to Senator Dick Black's office to try and lure him into going to Syria to rescue someone who had been in jail. And Dick Black said, no, this smells like a trap. And it was. They were probably going to try and kill him.
That was really a John McCain-linked trap, wasn't it? John yep. McCain played that,
yep.
as well as some other people, to try and basically taint him with pictures, perhaps,
yep.
of being associated with ISIS,
yep.
which really would have acted as sort of an erasure, to your points,
yep.
that were coming out in Shell Game at the time. But
yep.
go ahead, explain.
Well, I knew Senator Black, too, when I was in Washington, D.C. I knew him from Family Research Council. Him and I knew each other personally. So, he's a great man. I think he'll be tapped by the president to do some wonderful things in the administration because he's stepping down from the Virginia Senate. But there's nobody else to be a liaison to the Middle East than Dick Black because he's loved by the Syrians, the Iranians, the Russians. He's been on their TV shows. He's very highly respected. I had also debriefed Michael Cohen, the president's
right,
attorney,
right.
about this material and said, please get this to the president. He needs to be aware of this. He needs to know how to handle this and investigate it.
We actually made the phone call together.
Yep.
And when I first announced it to Michael Cohen, what the thing was, he had some not so colorful language that was unbelievable and couldn't actually happen. And, of course, we later persuaded him, and I think in subsequent phone calls, which, by the way, those calls are out on YouTube, by the way. You can listen to some of that. And Michael Cohen, at the time, was very, very cooperative. After he broke through with the revelation, nothing like that could ever he had no comprehension that these guys could actually be financing ISIS and everybody else. But he became a believer. There's no question about it, as did Donald Trump.
Yeah. Yeah, and they came after Michael Cohen for it. And
right.
I think he was broken and threatened for his other, life. And they've gone after all these people with process crimes and things like that should be totally unconstitutional. Every crime should be thrown out as fruit of the poisonous tree because you have a constitutional right to privacy. This whole thing was prefaced on the Carter Page FISA court warrant that was totally illegal. Once something is done out of illegality and criminal means, the Attorney General, getting back to your point, Barr, can issue a letter and a order, if you will, to the courts to say, I have discovered that the Department of Justice conducted these FISA warrant probes that started the cases against Manafort and Stone and Corsi and all these other people as completely fraudulent, completely illegal. It violated their constitutional rights. So it's all fruit of the poisonous tree. So everything has to be reset to zero. And these people need to be removed from jail immediately. This has to be done the right way. But they can't do it the right way because they never had the allowance to go after Manafort. They never had anything against Stone or Jerome Corsi. It was because of President Trump. And they tried to do this coup d'etat. They tried to get all this stuff in after the fact. It's absolutely disgusting. The one thing Hannity's done right is he's constantly
yep.
and doggedly attacked this and laid it out on. And John Solomon's done a good job, and so is the other gal, So they've exposed all of this and laid it out very methodically. And you see the grand chess game that these people were playing. They were corrupting government. Remember John Brennan at the CIA? I mentioned all these people in Shell Game in 2012. John Brennan was not CIA director yet. He was National Security Advisor.
Petraeus was still CIA director, I believe, at the time. Because he was CIA director during Benghazi.
Yeah, Petraeus, yeah. Right. He came in later. But all these people conspired to harm the president, President Trump. And I think Barr is going to reset everything. He's going to approach this methodically. He's going to expose every step that the Justice Department and Bruce Orr and Nellie Orr and all of the FBI, all the Department of Justice players, their relationship with the professor in Cambridge, as well as Christopher Steele and all these things. He's going to go through the whole process and say, wait a minute, you made a leap here. You didn't do this properly. You lied about this. How could you possibly have known this would happen and this unless you were working and colluding as part of a larger intelligence operation? Yeah, and that's what this was. Colluding. This was an intelligence operation against the president.
You know, you mentioned Jerome Corsi and Roger Stone and so on. Both have appeared many times on Agenda 21 Radio here, and we are going to be having Jerome Corsi on at in the third hour on Monday. And to set this whole thing in context of what you're talking about, Jerome Corsi, when I first started interviewing him, I was interviewing him in 2011, believe it or not, and one of the interviews, it's a classic that we did, was an interview of him. He was actually in the Social Security Department in Honolulu with Zulo. Lieutenant Zulo from, I think it was Lieutenant from Joe Arpaio's office, and they were investigating the actual, how did Barack Obama get his Social Security number, which they found to be fraudulent. And of course, then that was a discovery about the birth certificate and all that other good stuff. Now, you got to remember, you go back to 2011, we played this earlier in the week, that Donald Trump was demanding the full birth certificate of Barack Obama. And it was much of that was, of course, based upon Jerome Corsi's reporting and other people that were not, you know, the so-called birthers, including myself, who were raging about the fact that this thing was, in fact, a fraudulent document, which they ultimately produced the long form, which turned out to be fraudulent. But it was Donald Trump at the time who was trumpeting that and making it very clear that he was demanding to see it. Remember, he finally rolls up in his helicopter and says, well, I'm glad that they did release it. I don't know if it's real or not. We have to check into it. And, of course, it turned out to be fraudulent. Mm-hmm. And much to the chagrin of many of the Obama supporters that I knew, actually, they found out the hard way that it was actually phony. But, you know, Jerome Corsi has paid the price because he was one of those guys who came out against the Obama administration, and I think it was political payback, but of course what he did is he stuck it back in their eyes and said, I'm not signing anything that's a fraud.
Yes.
And that I think that really stopped everything. Once Corsi stood up like that, it put an end, I think, to the retaliation by Mueller on the people that were turning in. It could have stopped something on you, actually. Yeah.
Well, I for example, I told General Michael Flynn's brother when I met him at a conference in Texas. I went up to him with James and Joy and Moriarty, great people who were in Libya at the time of Benghazi and all that stuff. I went up and we talked with Michael Flynn's brother, and I said, look, General Flynn needs to understand something. The lawyers representing him, Covington and Burling, are bad people. I don't know if he knows that or not, but Covington and Burling is implicated in this larger terrorist financing operation. So they have approached him in order to get material and intelligence out of him and use it against him. They're not going to help him. And maybe he's doing this as part of his own intelligence operation for the White House. That's fine. But be advised, Covington and Burling is not a good law firm. Yeah, they are secretly positioning themselves. Now, what happened to Flynn, I think, is also going to be redeemed. I'd love to see him out and helping the president again. And I think all these people will, Paul, because this has fallen apart, like you said. This has come apart, and Barr is going to say, yep, it's all come apart. Now round two is going to be the next 2 years of revealing the criminals behind this whole operation. And that's when things are going to get interesting. That's when you're going to have real whistleblowers standing up in Congress saying, this is what Hillary Clinton did. This is what Eric Holder did. Here's the documents to prove it. Here's the WikiLeaks cable to prove it. Oh, you got Julian Assange and a pen in Pennsylvania or Virginia? Bring him on down and sit next to me, and we'll talk about this cable and this cable and this cable, and bring Brad Birkenfeld and bring Edward Snowden. Bring us all to the party, because the only ones who are going to have a chair at the end of the day are us and Hillary Clinton, Eric Holder, Lanny Breuer, Barack Obama, Stuart Eisenstadt. All these clowns are going to be hanging by piano wire at the end of a noose because of the treason that they did to American citizens and the dead soldiers that cry out from the grave that are dead because of Eric Holder, Lanny Breuer, Barack Obama, and Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, you know, that's just it, is that when you start to take a look at this and you start to hear the spin that's going on as of today, yesterday, and today. Well, yesterday it started with Chuck Schumer. All they have to fall back on now is really the same lies. And, you know, it's people were saying to me the other day, well, what are they going to do? Are they going to finally come clean? I said, no. They're going to double. This is now the triple down. They're tripling down. Yeah. On the lie, and it's, you know, they think that they've got a national narrative. The problem is that the truth is winning out at this point in time, and people are being forced to listen to that. Now, one of the big questions that comes up, and I think the Assange thing, and I absolutely 100% agree with you about Julian Assange. It's wonderful that he got arrested. Wonderful for him, because he is going to come to the United States, and as you know, they're fighting that. They want
to
keep
him invited him to testify to the Senate in August.
But I'm saying,
so he's going to say, hey, I'm sorry, I'm late to the party, but I came. Here's a bottle of scotch. Let's have a conversation.
And that's just it, is that they're fighting it like crazy. But he will be here, and he will testify. I'm sure he's going to be very, very excited to do so, because I think that he's going to make some big-time revelations that they're really not going to like. Such as what happened, who really is Guccifer? Is Guccifer? And I kind of played around with the audience in the last hour about who Guccifer could be, and especially in releasing the files, the FBI or the server, all that stuff that has been going on. You know, one of the things I wanted to, if you could, Scott, there's many different levels of security in the federal government, and the highest level allows you to see only for your eyes only certain top secrets, and the computers are kept in very secure rooms. What is the known as what level is that known as?
Well, that's a top secret sensitive compartmentalized information security clearance. It's the clearance I had. And you have the SIPR, NIPR, and TSSEI communication channels. Each email system essentially is a different box, so they're on different wavelengths. One's like FM, one's AM, and one's, you know, video, computer video, if you will. So there are three different systems, and TSSEI is the highest. And it compartmentalizes everything. You can only view and read certain things in SCIFs, which are sensitive compartmentalized information facilities, which are these soundproof rooms with armed guards. So a lot of the stuff is very high level. And a lot of the stuff, though, if I had found it in military channels, would have been classified instantly, Paul. But because I found it from the whistleblower himself, Brad Birkenfeld, they can't cover it up. I got it from prison. And, yeah, God and the white hats and everybody orchestrated it. But that's what terrorizes these people, because it will be confirmed by the WikiLeaks cables and all of the other cables that really Hillary Clinton wrote when she was at Secretary of State and stored on her server.
You see, this is the kind of detail that we've been bringing to people, is that about – the information that was contained from Hillary's server, and by the way, I totally have, you know, come clean on this whole issue. I was offered that information and turned it down. And as I was explaining to my audience earlier, is that there was a process. It took me about 5 or 10 minutes to work it out within my own head. Do not accept those things. Do not put them on your own server. And I did not. But it was interesting, that whole process going forward. I think that started back in 2014 and 15. I started getting these offerings that were super top secret. Now, I want to, so people understand that this is information that was actually on Hillary's servers and being distributed by Hillary. Now, some of this information, like you're talking about the TSSEI program, which is you're put in a room, there's armed guards, there's screens only. You cannot store or save the information that comes across the screen. I mean,
no listening devices. You can't have a phone with you. It's locked outside in an exterior cabinet.
And this begs the question, because from what I understand and what I have been told is that all these different emails, a lot of them, actually, it's somebody had to have taken a picture of the screen, which means that wherever those screens are at, what buildings are at, and so on, somebody was complicit in allowing someone to come in and take actual pictures and take those pictures and then put them up on the internet and circulate them around. And, of course, that, I think, is going to be one of the bits of evidence that's going to be very clear in court.
Yeah.
I mean, that's that is so treasonous that that sort of thing happened. I mean, this is where the death penalty comes in. I guess maybe they are probably wondering about that, those people that have committed these kind of crimes.
Well, there's no honor in any of the Clinton activities. We know from Sandy Berger, who went in and stole top secret documents from the Clinton days in 1998, 1997 in Washington, D.C. He smuggled them out, and he got
National
in trouble and got caught.
National Archives, 2002 and 3, I think. But that was it was a result, a direct result of him taking on information that was related to 9/11.
Yes. Yeah, a lot of it's done on the honor system too. A lot of it is, they don't tell when you have materials and such. You just sneak in with a camera. So a lot of it is going to come out eventually. And the other thing to consider is you mentioned Guccifer and all that. Bill Binney and Ray McGovern have talked about the fact that this Vault 7, a lot of the stuff may have been done by CIA and John Brennan to make it look like Russia did this.
Right.
What it was CIA all along.
Right, right. And that's something that we don't emphasize that enough. But the bottom line is that that's very, very true that, again, John Brennan has his dirty little fingers on so many things. And keep in mind that he was a national security advisor to President Barack Hussein Obama. Up until, Benghazi, when Benghazi happened and they replaced Petraeus, they made him the CIA director. And for the most part, Scott, I don't think there's been enough emphasis on John Brennan. He's come up with some interesting stories now that the Mueller report has been brought out. He's tried to change his tune. There not a lot of people are interviewing. I think he's going to leave the country. That's what I think.
I think so too. The crimes that these people have done, these are blood crimes. These are deaths of soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines. This is the death of contractors from areas of Central Command's area of operation, from Libya to Syria to Iraq to Afghanistan. All of these weapon systems were financed by Saudi Arabian Wahhabists. Saudi Arabia is the biggest enemy the United States has ever had. Not Iran, not Russia, Saudi Arabia. Now, Israel has been pushing Saudi Arabia because they've had an agenda against Iran for a long time. But the president, I think, is tapped into his Christian, Zionist base and has been pushing for Israel in order to gin up political support in 2020. I can understand that. But in the foreign policy, long-term strategic objectives, Saudi Arabia is not an ally of the United States, and neither is Israel when they start pushing the endless war agenda. That's why Tulsi Gabbard is dangerously attractive when she gets up and says, we need to stop all of these regime change wars and meddling in other nations. She's hitting a bell that resonates in the heart of the American citizens. That's why they voted for Donald Trump, was to stop a lot of this. So he needs to really pull back a little bit on the reins of Pompeo and Bolton and these people that are doubling down on the original Dick Cheney plan to dominate the world. That's not going to win him any supporters, and it can really hurt him if we get into a quagmire or a real fight with Russia or Iran and lose some men. But this Saudi Arabian Wahhabism was pushed by the madrasas and the Salafia schools, and they financed these operations against our own soldiers.
This goes back to the era of 1928 when the Muslim Brotherhood was formed with Al-Banna and Adolf Hitler.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, we have the Muslim Brotherhood here in this country and also the spinoff CARE, the Council on Arab-Islamic Relations, which is nothing more than a Nazi group. And, you know, I think the president needs to come out right straightforward and declare CARE and the Muslim Brotherhood, like they do in other countries, declare them a terrorist organization. There's even talk of even having MS-13, which we know that the influences down in El Salvador and Central America have been really influenced by the Saudis and the Muslim Brotherhood. I mean, if the president was to come out and declare them terrorist organizations, boy, that would just really help a lot, because look what would happen to people that are currently the Islamic Three in Congress. They would shut them up immediately.
Well, you know, that's a very good point. I think the MS-13 is a very powerful political victory for the president that isolates the Democrats instantly, because nobody likes MS-13. Nobody likes to see these people covered in tattoos with the most grotesque, monstrous appearance and doing monstrous things, from drugs and killings and sex slavery trafficking. That's MS-13. These people are covered in tattoos and look like the devil himself. There's no better candidate for the president to declare as a terrorist person and terrorist organization than MS-13 and justify military special forces intervention on the border against MS-13. All of these drug gang member thugs, declare them an enemy of the United States, which they are. They're not coming over to the border to work in construction or work in a church or work in a soup kitchen. They're coming over with their tattoos to engage in criminal activity and harm the American people and parasitically exist off of America till America itself dies. We're not going to tolerate that, Paul. I think you've got too many Americans with guns who are ready to be deputized, ready to stand on the border, ready to be Minutemen like their forefathers, and say, you will go no further. I don't care what the Democrats think. I don't care what Beto O'Rourke says. We're not breaking down the walls. We're raising them. We're policing our country. And President Trump is our president. And we're asking him and calling him to come and defend California, Nevada, Texas, Arizona, New Mexico from this onslaught, from this invasion of MS-13. So he needs to declare MS-13 as a terrorist organization, and nobody would disagree with him except the Democrats. But guess what? That's a great polarity, isn't it? Everybody goes, wow, the Democrats are from MS-13? Well, you can all go to hell. We're going to vote Republican this year.
Well, you know, to play off on that, Gavin Newsom just returned yesterday from his visit to El Salvador, which is one of the capitals, if you will, for MS-13. And we were kind of chiding the governor for going down. He left on the 7th, and now he's back. People are absolutely outraged that he was down there cavorting with MS-13. That's the appearance that it gives. Unfortunately, right or wrong, that's what it looks like. Now, this comes on the heels of what happened yesterday. And again, you look at the mentality of a Gavin Newsom. Gavin Newsom, several weeks ago, declares the death penalty basically is not going to happen under his term. And so everybody on death row, 737 people on death row who had committed absolutely heinous crimes and have been there for years, just literally rotting away, and should have been executed for these heinous crimes, he gave them an exoneration and said, there's not going to be any death penalty under my watch. So 737 men, women, are not going to be put to death for the crimes that they did. Now, yesterday, for the first time, I think they're getting their spinoff and clue from what we've been saying, a new California, the California District Attorneys Association staged a protest and gathered in Sacramento with the victims' family members of all these 737 people to protest Gavin Newsom and to take him on. And, boy, they were taking district attorneys from Orange County, Riverside, Northern California, just blasted the governor like I've never heard any governor ever by being blasted, especially by a law agency.
Well, I don't think there's any person more than you, Paul, that has championed and exposed the criminality in California and fought it so valiantly with the constitutional process of New California your efforts in this area are unparalleled, and the president really needs to make you the liaison to the rest of the country. We're all new Nevada, new Illinois, new Hawaii, new California. These are mitosis experiences. These are political mitosis events that are caused by the people, the good people of a state, being abused and corrupted and manhandled by people like we saw in the university, the prosecutor Fox, who let Justy Smollett get off. You're standing up and calling people out, and they're coming out, and they're creating a new state for real freedom because of it, and leaving the Democrat tyranny behind.
Well, listen, Scott, we got to run for time. Thanks for being with us on Agenda 21 Radio.
Thanks, Paul.
We'll be back, ladies and gentlemen. Stay strong.
Send it out, an SOS to the last vestiges of freedom, democracy, and the American way of life. Paul Preston with Agenda 21.
You're listening to Paul Preston's Agenda 21 Radio. Stay tuned for more of Paul Preston's Agenda 21 Radio.
This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.